Yeah, there it is. When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you just got back from your child's birthday party. And now you're exhausted, but that's okay. You still got your favorite podcast in your ear holes. Was that too specific? I don't know. It works for two out of the three guest hosts today. Maybe not that specific. Anyway, this is DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Our patrons make this show possible. Their generosity, their support means we get to make more of these. And in exchange, well, they get some cool stuff, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a lot of bonus content. A lot of bonus content, ladies and gentlemen, including Feeling This with Alex Solman and Christian Spicer, two seasons of that. We got bonus chats. We got spoiler chats. We got the audio version of the book club, talking about the Malazan Book of the Fallen. And we got that Wednesday paid DLC program to get you through your week. Middle of the week, hump day treat, where Lana Bashinsky joins Christian Spicer and myself to talk about all sorts of wackiness. It's a good fun time. You got to check it out. The only way to do so is to become a patron at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games and their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also, games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who's giving his daughter the gift of Netflix, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. Maybe you just came back from your daughter's recital where she sang a song from Les Mis and you ate a corn chowder soup. And on the way into your office to record an episode of DLC, you stubbed your toe on your door jamb because while you usually wear house slippers everywhere, in that moment you weren't because it's warm in Los Angeles. And maybe you're listening to this episode as you're recording it because you are one of the hosts of it. That might be maybe specific.
Could be.
That might be specific, but maybe that's you.
You joke that I'm too specific, but there's some person out there who's like, I just did come from my daughter's birthday party. It's like they're doing the show just for me, and that's what I go for in that moment. Somebody
Jared,
feel like,
Duck! Ah, Jared, is, Duck!
This week, it's just for me. Well, it's always just for you, ladies and gentlemen. We're here just for you. We got a big show. We got a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Some really cool games. We're going to get to some tabletop time this week. Woo! It's going to be fun. And we have an awesome guest to do all that with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm excited because DLC stands for Dimensional Lines Combined. Because that's a bit like a voxel. And we have the host of the voxel show, Max Neal, joining us for the first time. Hello, Max.
How's it going, everyone? Glad to be here.
Glad to have you.
Yeah.
You come highly recommended for members of our audience who
that's amazing
had a write-in campaign to have me reach out and meet you. And come to find out, we live in the same town.
I know, practically neighbors, right? Kind of wild. Yeah.
Beginning of a beautiful friendship.
I got to say, you reached out. And you know, we joke kind of in the content creator space about like making it. Like, when have you made it? And honestly, I think being on the podcast here has been like the moment where I had to breathe, like ask myself, like, oh my gosh, have I made it? I could just quit today, because that's what you do, like at your peak, right? As you say that
to all the podcasts.
You're also kind, Max, you definitely kind. Don't quit at your peak because Jeff and I are still doing it. So I can tell you,
yeah.
I'm stoked to have you, man. It's gonna be fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun.
Let's dive right in. We got a lot to get to. Let's start the show the way we always do, with story of the week.
Story of the week. It's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. That's also where you can send comments, questions, advice, suggestions, whatever comes to your mind. We love hearing from you. DLCfeedback@gmail.com. But that's not the only way. You can also hang out in our Discord, which is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Great folks hanging out, talking about all sorts of stuff. Why not? Why not join the Discord? It's good times. But Max, you are our guest, so you get first pick of story. Which would you consider to be your story of the week?
Yeah, it has to be the threat to democracy, I think, that erupted the last couple of days here. We're talking about Helldivers 2. Man, I've been playing the game for a while, probably pretty much since launch, because I loved the original. It was absolutely fantastic. And of course, we all know that Helldivers 2 kind of exploded on the scene and became very popular, incredibly popular.
Yeah.
But a couple days ago, there was a announcement posted by, I think it was the Helldivers Twitter account, if I'm not mistaken, via Sony. I guess they were kind of, you know, for sending Sony's message along, explaining that players are going to have to create and connect a PlayStation Network account. If they don't have one already, they can create one for free, but they have to connect it by June 4th or lose access to being able to play Helldivers 2. And I'm kind of in awe of this decision. You know, perhaps not terribly surprising from Sony's perspective that they want this, but what has happened because of this is there are many, 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 many countries in the world that are basically forbidden from creating PlayStation Network accounts. And so players in those countries who can't create a PlayStation Network account will not be able to continue to play the game that they've spent, what was it, 30 bucks, 40 bucks on release, something like that, right? It was pretty cheap.
Oh, it's 170 countries, just to be precise. Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so, of course, as a result of this, or, you know, many players and many people, presumably, that didn't review the game prior to this have gone and review bombed Helldivers 2 on Steam. 211,000 negative reviews in the last 3 days. 211,000. That is just mind-blowing.
Most games would be thrilled with that number of copies sold.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And that's a testament to it, right? Like, there's a big movement, you know, in frustration about this. And I've been thinking about this for the last couple of days now, because on one side of it, you know, we know gamers sometimes to be a little bit reactionary, a little bit quick to jump at an opportunity to criticize developers, publishers, whoever it is. You know, there's a line there between advocacy and sticking up for people and, you know, raging about it. But I think this is legitimate. I think it's really upsetting that effectively what Sony's hard line is on this, at least as we know it right now, because they released it on, what was it, Friday, right before they went out to the office and then left for the weekend.
Well,
and
have a great weekend, everybody. Right, see you on Monday.
And of course, this is the long weekend in Japan. I'm not sure which Sony, you know, kind of threw the hammer down on this, but it's a long weekend in Japan, which means they're not back till Tuesday. And it has erupted in the space here, the Helldivers 2 space. It's really upsetting.
To be fair, before anyone could review bomb it on Steam, they had to first get the activation codes, and then they had to go arm the terminal. So it was like two steps before
you could. It's hard to review it because you push up, down, left, down.
Yeah.
It's real, and mostly down, Titan really. You're just doing
down.
This is a wild thing. Talk about something that went from having just almost universal player goodwill to flushing that down the toilet in one fell swoop. There is a comment from the Helldivers 2 community manager that was posted on the official Discord for Helldivers 2 that is, I think, revealing in its... this doesn't seem to be very veiled in it you know, in its apparent expression of, hey, we didn't make this decision, everybody. It says, quote, internal discussions are ongoing about the mandatory linking of PSN accounts. And while I can't reveal details, the response from our dev teams has been pretty universally negative, and we're looking for better options.
I worked in consulting for a couple of years, and this is like perfect we don't want to say that there's a problem that we disagree with, but yeah, we definitely disagree with it. And
it sounds like a confirmation of this was a top-down decision, not a bottom-up decision, and we're at the bottom, and we're screaming in unison with all of you, but we don't get to make the decision.
Yeah. It's a big, you know, we're seeing the divide there between the developer and the publisher, right? And yes, the powers that they both hold. Because, you know, in an ideal world, developers who typically are pretty close to gamers and players and understand what they want would have a little bit more power in these kinds of conversations. But, yeah, you know, I look at this and I think we have this ongoing console war and this big next 5 years between Sony and Microsoft, this big question of, you know, who is going to be the more dominant console over the next, you know, 2025 to 2030, assuming that we have consoles in the next 5 years, right? Yeah. Like, who knows? Right. And I would imagine that both Sony and Microsoft want as much as possible to get as many people on their platform, you know, your friends, your achievements, your games, you know, where your habits lie, right? The games that you play and how you access them. And this is a pretty clear move by Sony in a way to try to get people onto that platform. It would seem, right? We don't exactly know from them why this needs to be this way, why it's a necessity. Because as far as I know, I think there's been crossplay in the game with between PlayStation and PC.
Yes.
Perhaps maybe that requires the linking of your PlayStation Network account in order to make that happen. But,
well, we don't know, like you say, we don't know the details, but it sure seems to me, if I had to put some money down, it sure seems to me that, you know, this was the first sort of day and date Sony cross release between PC and PlayStation. And I think we were applauding that. We were like, oh my gosh, Sony's been having these big lags between when the games arrive on their console and you know, eventual PC releases. And it was awesome that they were embracing PC as a platform. But here was the first time where it was day and date. It was simultaneous and really seemed like a cool thing. And Christian and I, you know, you and I both spoke at length about how we think that is part of the recipe for the success of Helldivers 2. The fact that PC gamers got in on this day one propelled the game to the heights it reached or has reached. And I think it got a lot of that momentum because of that. And it sure seems to me that some person wearing a business suit in a room went, hey guys, now that this game has been a smash success on PC, can't we get a little rub off that in some way? Can't we, I don't know, leverage that success in some way that benefits us more directly? And this feels like an idea that was late in coming, that came from the success of this game. And I think that's why it doesn't pass the smell test. I have no proof of any of that, but man, that's sure what it seems like.
And with plenty of examples in the space of requiring people or asking people to sign up for your service. I think of Borderlands, for instance, right? They had their own email sign up that you could sign up for, but if you signed up for it, and it was optional, if you signed up for it, you got codes that you could enter into the game and get cool weapons in the game. Yeah. And this effectively has come down. And we haven't seen much of the marketing around this. We haven't seen the in-game requirement where it says you must, you know, fill this out or else. So this, I think that actually starts tomorrow. So, of course, we'll see tomorrow what that looks like. But, you know, if it were, hey, sign up with your PlayStation Network account and you will get X armor or X weapon, which, of course, Helldivers 2 players, myself included, would love to have.
Right.
You know, it's a little bit more carrot, a little bit less stick, but what we have is unfortunately a lot of rumor.
Yeah, yeah. Pure punitive. Yeah. Feels very punitive. It feels very, like you say, very stick. And I can understand why people are pushing back, especially if you're in one of those countries where it's like, oh, you don't get to play this anymore. That feels incredibly punitive. Christian, is there any way to look at this that makes sense from Sony's perspective that we're overlooking? Because it sure seems like a pretty, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, my information is that valuable that you're willing to just shut out a whole section of your player base in order to get my juicy, juicy info? That doesn't feel very good. Is there any way to look at this that doesn't feel gross from the end user's perspective?
Yeah, maybe by the time you're listening to this, we'll have that answer. Maybe when you're coming home from your child's birthday and this episode is perfectly yeah. timed for you, you will have that answer.
I suspect that this is going to change the first part of the week. So by the time you listen to this, there may have already been an announcement of like, we were kidding. We just request that you have a PSN account.
So large companies often make bad statements. Uninformed, not all the information. It's not infrequent, unfortunately. And so if I'm looking at a lot of recent Sony moves and I try to find the best justification I can for this, I'll look at the upcoming Ghost of Tsushima PC port, which I'm very excited about. I love that game on PS4. I love the PS5 update. I'm very excited for the PC features they've already talked about. They've also talked about that game having a PlayStation overlay, where you will have access to your PlayStation friends. You'll get PlayStation achievements. If you have, I believe this next part's accurate, if you have whatever account you need to have cloud saves, that save can carry over. You'll be able to cross play for the legend stuff. And I think that is really cool. That is nice carrot. That's nice value add. People like their achievements. People, that Sony UI is nice. I like it. And I think being able to have that on the PC experience makes it feel cohesive. It maybe welcomes you into the PlayStation family in a way that when you do buy a PlayStation 5 or something like that, you feel comfortable, you're used to it, you're playing with people that have it. I like all of that. So maybe there's a part of this for Helldivers that to bring that experience over requires a PlayStation user account as the first step. So perhaps they're announcing, hey, you got to have this account, and then maybe at not E3, Sony comes out and says, we have this major update for Helldivers 2 where you're going to have Killzone enemies, you're going to have Kratos, I don't know, whatever, right? But they're going to have a big moment for Helldivers 2. We're bringing the UI over so you can get achievements on PC. And so all of this stuff is part of this corporate, bad word I'm about to say, sorry parents, synergy of creating this cohesive whole. I would like to believe that that is part of it, and this is just poor messaging coming out.
It's just like a clumsy way to get there.
Yes, a stubbed your toe on your way into your office to report a podcast, as everyone listening to this did tonight. The other side of it that I think – well, the internet loves being outraged. The other side of it that I think maybe is less gross for Sony is – and don't get me wrong, this sucks, but everyone else has already been doing this, not revoking access after they've had it, but like to play a Ubisoft game, man, OBS keeps crashing. Sorry, audio people. There's probably no video of this. To play a Ubisoft game, the amount of hoops I have to jump through to like play it on every it's like sign into this, got to have this account, you got to do this account, or as someone who now is playing through old Activision games now that Microsoft owns them and Bobby left, I think I have like a BlizzNet account for some games. I have an Activision account for other games. I think two of the Call of Duties require different logins than a Microsoft account to have it online. Microsoft accounts are required for a lot of Steam games online. And I believe Helldivers 2, when launched, said in like all that stuff that no one reads, that there is a third-party login requirement, which so many of these other PC games also have. And so I think there's, you know, crappy, but the state of gaming in 2024, reasons for it. I think the really, really bad stuff here for this is A, the messaging, and B, if all these players do in fact lose access. I'm guessing they won't, which then goes back to A, crappy messaging.
Well, I mean, it's entirely messaging, right? Because you're absolutely right. If this is like, hey, welcome to Helldivers 2. We need you to have this account in order to continue. Nobody blinks an eye, right? You've been playing Helldivers 2 for 3 months. You better get this account now or we're kicking you off. Now it's
we need our daily active
weird.
User number up. That's what we report to shareholders is our MDAOs, and we want to monetize these DAOs. So,
and admittedly, the growing pains for Sony are going to be higher. If you think about comparatively to Microsoft, right? Like if you're assuming you're using a Windows computer and Game Pass, your Windows computer asks you, what is your Outlook account or what is your Microsoft account? And then the first time you log into Xbox, it goes, well, I'll make the assumption that this is going to be your Xbox account. Here you go. And it's relatively seamless for the user that doesn't know any better or doesn't have the history of Xbox previous to that, right? If you're an Xbox player like I was, who played Xbox 360 and then kind of ended there, I ended up getting the PS4 and kind of jumping ship to Sony. Don't kill me about this. But it was a little bit harder to do that, where, you know, my account on my computer was different and I had to, you know, find a different gaming account for my Xbox account. Now with Game Pass, it's so much easier for Microsoft to get people on that platform. It's practically seamless. And Sony has to do a little bit more work, clearly a little bit more marketing and PR work with players to set, you know, to make it make sense to them. That aside from having your game taken away from you because you can't make an account, which is just tragic. Really sad.
That is the one that is just, it throws it into the realm of like indefensible. It's like, well, I don't understand how you can defend that decision. And as we've said numerous times, by the time you're listening to this, there may be some rollback of that in some way that we're not aware of yet. But sitting here, you know, on Sunday night, after this went into effect, 3 days ago, it feels like something that could have been foreseen very easily by the people who put it into effect. And, you know, it's one of those unforced errors that you just wonder how these things get past multiple layers of people having to sign off on it.
And all that to say too, just because we're kind of, you know, reaching some kind of an audience here, right? Like, there's a lot of hate, you know, directed towards the developers. But the reality is these conversations behind the scenes are very multifaceted. There, it may not be, and it clearly Arrowhead and their messaging is saying, hey, we're trying to push back on this. We're on your side. We don't want this. And so, you know, when you think about expressing yourself in this topic, please, you know, like, there are real human beings behind the scenes who are working on this, and there's a publishing company that really wants you to sign up for, you know, their Sony account.
Great point. It's a great point that should be reinforced. And I can only imagine, again, this is a fiction that I'm creating in my mind, but it seems plausible. I can only imagine the poor devs like, I'm leaving another message. I know you guys are gone for the weekend, but I just wanted to see if there's any way you could get back to me before Monday. We really would love to roll back, tell the audience something. Again, 211,000 negative reviews at this point. Just call me back. Call me back. Okay, call me back. That's what it seems like to me. Anyway.
Fingers crossed for resolution of this.
All three of us are united in the fact that this is a great game, and it has been a great game, and it's been a huge hit. It's one of the stories of 2024 in gaming. You know, this kind of came out of nowhere, been a huge hit, huge quality game. They've, you know, it's just a shame that it has this shadow over it now.
Patrons can watch Jeff and I carry Dave Chen on a VOD of our Let's Play from Friday, where Dave was just dying nonstop, and it was just all
he's
Jeff
level
and
42, and I'm level 11, and Christian's level 14, and I think that alone tells you who has the most skill. You know,
yeah, it's like golf. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
Speaking of corporate overlords making crappy decisions, Take-Two, the announcement came out this past week that they are shutting down and laying off the folks at Roll7 and Intercept Games. Kerbal Space Program 2, which is not out yet, Intercept Games. And Roll7 are one of my favorite devs of recent memory. Not a Hero, fantastic. Ollie Ollie Games, I think Ollie Ollie World was one of my, I mean, I talked about it every week because the two DLCs for that also were fantastic. Absolutely incredible. Yes, it's a skateboarding game, but it is one of the best precision platform games of all time. I mean, it's up there like Celeste levels of excellent for me in the way that it's welcoming for new players, but rewards that precision and that practice. And Take-Two is shutting both of them down.
Rollerdrome, too. I don't want you to miss out on that.
Rollerdrome.
That's a game you and I both loved. Was on our end of the year, year before last, I think.
Thank you.
We loved Rollerdrome. Roll7, just a top-tier studio. And
hit after hit.
Hit after hit. Gone. Just gone.
And then also part of this is Private Division, who have been responsible for a lot of really great, I mean, I guess maybe they're not indie games if Private Division is part of Take-Two, but indie games and ushering in these really great games and giving them a publishing platform. It seems like Private Division also lost or is losing a lot of folks across a lot of their offices. And it sucks. You know, there's still going to be a million great games to play. As a player, there's always going to be a million great games to play. But this feels like a candle being snuffed out. These were studios that made really interesting games and genres that weren't a dime a dozen. And they all played really well. They controlled really well. And they brought something fun, new, and unique to the industry. And it sucks to see them go away, especially from a company that by all accounts has all the money. And it really sucks that there wasn't a way to make this work.
They just acquired Gearbox for $460 million. You know, they've got a pretty big game coming out in the form of Grand Theft Auto 6. I know that got delayed, but it seems like they're going to make some money with that one when that comes out. We got a really interesting, tweet from a design consultant for Roll 7. I assume, you know, she does not care anymore because this is a bit of a bridge burn, but I thought very telling and beautiful tweet. Design consultant Anissa Sanusi tweeted, "The team at Roll 7 was some of the best people I've ever worked with, and they deserved way better than this. We won an effing BAFTA literally a year ago. This is such a dumbass industry." Hard to disagree with any of that.
Yeah, beyond just, you know, the fact that these games control mechanically, they're works of art. I mean, Ollie World is one of the most beautiful games I've seen in a long time. Their use of color in that game was it drew me in as somebody who doesn't normally play a lot of skateboarding games, though I did in the past, and I fell in love with that game from that alone. And it's really just the saddest. And you know, Kerbal Space Program too. I mean, I have played a ton of the original and was really looking forward to this. If I'm not mistaken, Kerbal Space Program 2 was made early access. And I will say it came out pretty rough. Like, it needed a little bit of work. And the announcement from Take-Two was that they were going to continue support for the game. And I think a lot of people who have played Kerbal Space Program 2 would agree that the game needs a lot more than support at this point. It needs a bit more development work. And it's just so tragic and heartbreaking to hear that that just will not come. It will not ever, probably.
Indeed. You know, we've talked about stories like this ad nauseum over the last 2 years. It just seems like they keep happening. More people fired. This one was resulting in over 500 jobs. And, you know, these two studios being shut down. And it feels like this is nonstop. And every time it comes up, we repeat the same stuff. I think, there's another statement from one of the director of publishing at Larian, who is not directly involved with this, but commented on it anyway. His name is Michael Douse. He said, quote, "The large corporate cycle is just gushing about people, culture, the human element, teamwork, and pride. And then when operational failures lead to mass layoffs, the human element is so deliberately thrown away. The mask peeled off. Corporations do not care about you. The idea that this period paves the way for a brighter future is so far from the truth. Performative butchery might look proactive for a fiscal year, but damn are we going to see the knock-on effects in a market that's already too unpredictable to keep up with."
Yeah. When I heard about this news, I was thinking to myself, like, hey, it's obviously it's tragic. A lot of people are affected. Hopefully, maybe they can band together and go on to this, whatever the next thing is for them, yeah. Right? But you think about the trend that we've seen in gaming and what's been happening to these companies laying people off and supposedly, possibly, because they're in financial straits. If you imagine somebody starting up a company and going to a bank and saying, hey, I need a small business loan because I want to hire, you know, 10 people onto a video game company, what is that bank going to think when... Yeah. All we see in the news is layoff, 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 layoff. Like I hope it's not that way. I hope that there's some hope for these people and these people affected. But I mean, we saw the numbers from last year, from 2023. And then thinking, okay, that's behind us. Hopefully 2024 is better. And it's just more of the same.
Yeah.
It's really
first
really
half of the year. We're just already outpacing the entire year.
Yeah.
It's tragic. And every time I try to find some sort of silver lining, like you say, like, oh, maybe this will give folks the opportunity to do their passion project. Or I hear, you know, I read something like what Michael Dowse wrote, and it's hard to think that there is any silver lining to this kind of stuff. It's just brutal. So on that cheery note, pour one out for Roll 7 and Intercept. I never played any of the Kerbal Space Program games, or either of them. I heard they're great.
I can't say how you should go play Ollie Ollie World. I do know that if you buy it, I don't think that Roll 7 gets any money. I won't say how you should play it, but go play those games.
I cannot recommend Rollerdrome enough. What an awesome
so good
mashup of two very disparate genres, and it somehow works. Like, what if Tony Hawk and a third-person action shooter were the same game?
Plus, Mad Max, you know, like, it's like, or like Hunger Games. And the soundtracks in both are great. Yeah, it sucks. And for
those looking forward to KSP 2, what it seems like is a lot of the community is kind of shifting back to the original. And there's a big modding community for this game. I'm not sure how deep these mods go, though, from what I've played, they can have some pretty game-changing effects. So if you haven't played them and if you're interested in simulation games, I got to say Kerbal Space Program 1 was an amazing game. It's fantastic. It still holds up today to the point where when they announced KSP 2, I was thinking, why? Like, the original, the original's great. It's fantastic. We don't need a second one. But hey, KSP 1 is still there with plenty of mod support and a really passionate community willing to help you learn it if you want to.
There you go. All right, we're going to take a quick break for a sponsor, and we'll be right back right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Raycon. You've heard us talk about Raycon's everyday earbuds. Maybe you've heard us talk about them and thought, wait a second, the same audio quality I expect from the big guys, but at half the price? That sounds pretty good. But if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons yet, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, now is the time to check them out. Why? Well, they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. These are the earbuds that I have, that you have, Christian. I have the red. I have the red everyday earbuds. I like them very much. One of the things that annoys me so much about technology these days is that you get like these very generic colors that just blend into everything in your house. And so that I lose things. I lose tech because it just blends into the black environment of the couch, or, you know, blends into the white table that I have. I really like the fact that my red everyday earbuds from Raycon, they don't blend into anything. I know exactly where they are. Usually
Yeah, I'm looking. There's a blush violet one now.
Ooh, blush violet. Real nice.
I have a purple iPhone. It's my purple iPhone. And this looks like it matches really well. And like the thing that gets me, we all have our earbuds. We like our earbuds. But I also like sharing music. And so now I'm thinking like, oh, this is going to be the way to do it because I can have multi-point connectivity. So it's like, hey, everybody, listen to what dad's listening to. Which I think is exciting because a lot of times we have our earbuds in and we feel isolated.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do that anymore. I love that.
So good. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, you will now also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. It's awesome. They got a quick charge function. Very cool. They're weatherproof and or sweat resistant, whether you're making your own weather or, you know, your sweat is kind of, my sweat is more like a hurricane. So I wear these when I run, by the way, and I love that.
My sweat is like, am I on my iPad or my iPhone? It doesn't matter.
Exactly. They have optimized gel tips for cozy custom fit. They got that ergonomic shape that fits the widest range of ears. And these new colors, the new colors. I love personalizing those things. I want my red. I got my red. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there is no better time. Their upgraded model will blow you away. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner. Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/DLC today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/DLC. That's buyraycon.com/DLC. All right. My story of the week. I'm going to do something a little more fun, at least for me. And that is a new Batman Arkham game was announced, ladies and gentlemen. And guess what? They got my letters. It's going to be in VR. It's going to be exclusive to MetaQuest 3. It's called Batman Arkham Shadow. We are going to find out more about this game at Summer Game Fest
soon. June. Yeah.
Yeah. But just the announcement of it, just the awareness that it's a thing has me so excited. It's going to be my story of the week this week. I am very excited. It's Camouflage, which is the developer of the Iron Man VR game. So they're jumping ship from Marvel to DC, but that game is very underrated. I think because it originally came out on PSVR and had a lot of compromised visual
PSVR
fidelity.
PSVR 1. Yeah.
Yeah, the first, exactly. And it looked pretty rough when it came out. It played, I thought, great. The mechanics of flying the Iron Man suit with hand repulsors, so cool. Very, very clever. Well done. But I don't think, even though the game was then repurposed as a MetaQuest game, and it had some updates, I don't think it ever really got the attention that it deserved. So I'm hoping this Batman Arkham Shadow game will allow Camouflage to reveal themselves. Huh? See what I did? I'm super excited about this. We don't know mechanically anything about the game. There's a teaser trailer that accompanied the announcement that is just pre-rendered, shows, you know, kind of a POV of maybe the Batman, rats in the city, Gotham. Streets, and then just a silhouette or just a sort of a shadow because it's Arkham Shadow. So we don't know anything about how it'll play, but it has me excited. I mean, Rocksteady is not involved, but I do think Camouflage is clearly experienced with VR and knows how to deliver a superhero experience. And if that original PlayStation VR Batman sort of tease experience is the template that they're going for, that thing, while brief and, you know, not a full game, it has me very excited about what the potential for Batman Arkham Shadow could be. Max, are you a VR gamer at all?
I'm not yet. It's been something that I want to get into so much myself. But I do remember, actually, Batman Arkham VR on the PSVR because it was the first time, I think, maybe ever, that I put on a VR headset. And I was in a Best Buy, just in the middle of the large aisle, kind of running down the Best Buy. And I put the headset on. They said, "Hey, we'll load up Batman for you." And I was blown away at that time. I think the demo had you kind of put your pretend hands on a pretend handlebar and lean over the handlebar and look down.
Yeah.
And I got, you know, full on like that fear, that sensation of, oh my gosh, I'm gonna fall. Like I can't do this in the middle of a Best Buy. Fell flat on my ass and just embarrassed myself, in front of the line of people waiting to try the PSVR. I am just so excited for this kind of almost this next 10 years of virtual reality, because we're finally getting to the point where these experiences feel really immersive. It's not just, hey, I've got the helmet on my head and I've got some sound in here, but actually, you know, the motions and the movements of your bodies that feel that way. And we might be getting into it today, maybe not, but I got a chance to try out a really cool experience at Universal Studios Japan that just blew me away. So,
well, why don't you mention it now? Yeah, I'd love to hear more about it. You tell me about it.
So we went to Universal Studios Japan while we were there. It's a quick trip out of Osaka to get there. And you can pay, it was about $20 a ticket to get into a Monster Hunter Iceborne themed, they call it XR, but it's a VR experience. And you walk in there and you walk into this warehouse and you get to choose little elements about your character and kind of customize your character and give them a name. And you get to choose one of five weapons that you're going to be able to use in this experience. And then they put on your body the full computer and the headset and the wrist trackers and all of this. And the moment they put the headset on, you are effectively in Monster Hunter Iceborne. And I loved Monster Hunter World. It was one of my favorite games of all time. It really just was freaking awesome. So we knew we had to try this. They put the headset on and you play cooperatively with three other players. So you're walking around this warehouse and you have free range of movement because you're not connected to cables in the ceiling or on the floor or back to your computer because you're wearing the computer on your back. And at some point, you know, you're climbing vines and you're shooting your grappling hook and you're fighting monsters, of course. At some point, they give you, or in real life, they hand you what is probably not a full-size weapon, right? But a foam replica weapon of your weapon. And then in the game, you see that weapon. And of course, the weapons in Monster Hunter are absolutely ridiculous. You know, they're larger than life and no average human would be able to pick them up and actually use them. But you feel like you're using it. And it was so cool. And it was even cooler by the fact that there's four of you, but I only went with myself and my fiance. We were paired up with these two Korean girls who were just over the moon excited for this experience. And so the four of us are geeking out, you know, walking through and ooing and aahing at this environment. And as you're walking through, you know, a monster might hit you with a breath attack and you get shot with a breath a burst of cold air. Amazing. It was the most immersive and incredible VR experience I've ever experienced. It was close to that future that we see, right? Where we're wearing the skin suit and you get the full body, can feel all the punches and getting stabbed and because of course we want all these things, right? But it was so close to that and just really inspiring to be able to try that out. It was really, really cool.
That does sound really cool. It's awesome that they're doing a Monster Hunter thing. I hadn't even heard of that.
Yeah. Well, Universal Studios Japan, they basically cut out all of the US-based stuff, like no Transformers, I can't remember what the other big attractions are here in the United States. And they replace them all with anime and with video games. And it's just, it's the other side of pop culture under presumably under the Universal brand, right?
Right.
Kind of bucket, in a way that we wouldn't have gotten access to here in the States. So I really strongly recommend if anybody's in Osaka, you know, doing a trip to Japan or anything like that, it was a must see. And you get the tickets in addition to your Universal ticket, and it was absolutely worth it to try it out. It's not a long thing. I think the activity was like 20 minutes, but it was just so great to be a part of something that was like one step beyond the virtual reality in my room.
During the sort of the first boom of VR, when the first Oculus was coming out and the Vive headset was coming out, I got invited to a number of events like that were location specific. There was a Terminator one I did, a Star Wars one I did. And yeah, I mean, it's a whole other ball game when the geometry of the room works. It's very cool stuff. Now contrast that with how I've seen this announcement reported, which is almost universally on websites. There's a new Batman Arkham game. Unfortunately, it's not what you want. It's not, here's the disappointing part. It's going to be exclusive to Quest. And there's a part of me that understands that, right? I feel like VR, AR is one of those technologies that for whatever reason, I think it's price point. There's a certain glee around announcing its downfall. And so all of the reporting I've seen about Batman Arkham Shadow has been, hey, you know, they're making another Batman Arkham game just like we wanted, except not at all how we want it to be, without knowing anything about how this game is going to be. And also setting aside the fact that the Meta Quest 2 and 3 have sold very, very well. And there's a pretty strong install base for these things. So, Christian, what do you make of Batman Arkham Shadow? Is this a disappointment? Is this Meta just throwing money at something, or are we actually going to see something that kind of pushes people into this space a little?
Both, I think. All of the above. I'm trying to think, does Meta own Camouflage? I was just starting to Google that.
Do they? Did they buy them?
I don't know. I thought bought by Meta. I'm going to find out real quick. What bums me out about this, they did. 2022, they acquired Camouflage. What bums me out about this announcement is I feel like maybe there's some undecided folks at Max, because that's what the whole parent company is called, right? Max.
The one to watch for HBO?
Yeah. About what the heck the Arkham universe is. Because Suicide Squad Killed the Justice League came out and was very much Rocksteady developed, very much constantly said, this is a continuation of the Arkham series. This is in that canon. This is the same franchise. We're continuing that story. Yes, it looks completely different. Yes, that franchise ended with Batman going away, but don't worry, we have him back. And then broad spoilers for that game. That game brings that Batman, Suicide Squad, brings that Batman back and kind of does them dirty. And now this game is announced as another Arkham game. And it's like, is this before Suicide Squad? Or is this like after Suicide Squad and Brainiac is eventually defeated? And then he's like, just kidding, I'm fine. And now I'm back at fighting Ratcatcher, whoever, you know, this villain ends up being. Or is this part of the Arkham Origins branch of the Arkham franchise that Rocksteady never acknowledged as being part of the Arkham universe, even though it is in it's it, so I love Batman. Arkham VR was super cool, even though I'm going to spoil, that's a very old game. I'm going to spoil a thing in that game. They just straight up kill Nightwing in a way that's like also done kind of dirty. It's like, you know, this beloved debt, and it's like just for shock value. Mechanically very cool. Very cool to put on the cowl, do detective mode, all that stuff, very cool. But as someone who loves the Arkham games, including Origins, it became patched and became very good, and I think had some of my favorite boss fights of any of those. I don't know what the Arkham franchise is anymore. And so I'm stoked that Camouflage is making Batman VR game. And I wish it wasn't called Arkham. I think that's my umbrella where my parents are killed as acrobats that I live under.
In a way, that's quintessential Batman, though, right? Because we reboot Batman every 5 years with a new actor, but the same story over and over. And I get it. Like, we, you know, it's his origin. And of course, you know, you can't discount that you have new people coming into the space and seeing it for the first time. I remember, you know, some of the old Batman TV show, frankly, with him and Robin, you know, running around and trouncing around, and then to be reintroduced to him again in another movie, and then another movie, and another movie, kind of the same, but no continuity, right? Continuity.
I just feel like someone was like, Arkham will sell us 10x more copies of this game, so we're putting Arkham in the title, right. Like, we're not going to put Arkham in this game.
It's code for good Batman video game. That's what it is. I don't even need to speculate on how it will play. Like, I kind of already know how it's going to play. Like, I'm going to be able to throw a batarang. Hopefully I'll be able to grappling hook my way around. Maybe I'll be able to glide over the city. All of that in VR is going to be incredible. Incredible. Detective mode. Sure. Do it. Awesome. Like, this game has the potential of being extremely cool, extremely fun. I just hope it, you know, it's not restricted by being an only on the headset game. I think
it is though, right? Like, it's going
to be 100% going to be only on the headset game. Yes. But I hope it doesn't. I mean, Asgard's Wrath 2 is, I need to talk about that more. I talked about it at the end of last year and I haven't talked about it since, but that game, for all the people that are like, oh, boo VR, there is not a more fun, incredible experience. I think Asgard's Wrath 2 is as good as any game you want to put up against it. And I
but
know
it's
I'm
small.
Biased,
it's super short. It's very tiny. Just a, not a 120-hour deep experience.
It is indeed. But, you know, so that is possible, right? That is a possibility that this is going to be an awesome. And I think the Assassin's Creed VR game is awesome. I had a blast with it. So, you know, I have high hopes that this is going to be great. And it just, it kind of chaps my hide a bit that that the sort of general reporting around it is all like, well, you'll be disappointed because it's on a VR headset. It's like, no, this is going to be amazing. Anyway.
While we're in this mini VR talk segment, I am curious what else might come out from Meta around this time. They've already announced, you know, the Meta Quest 3 headset partnership with Microsoft. It's going to be like the Xbox branded or co-branded headset to bring that experience. They've also announced opening up their OS to other manufacturers. And so, and
which is huge.
That's huge. Their financials show that they continue to lose billions of dollars or spend. I guess you're not losing it if you're planning to recoup it later with market dominance. But at this point, lose billions of dollars in this space. I think they are showing a continued commitment to trying to be the winner in it.
Yeah.
Whether or not that's a good thing or bad thing, it depends on how you feel about Meta. But I feel like announcing another big game like this that is – already more expensive because they have to pay DC for Batman.
Yeah.
This isn't the Booster Gold VR game, you know, that would have been cheaper, or the original IP VR game where you're still doing the same things. This is Batman. And so they spent all that money on Asgard's Wrath 2, a very expensive game. They're spending money on this, it seems like, and continuing to build this stuff out, I think is exciting for what the future continues to be right now for VR.
It's the way to move the needle is get great software on it.
Yeah.
It's exactly why everybody is so, you know, jumping up and down to talk about how the Vision Pro is underperforming. It's like, well, there's just not enough to do on it. You know, if you had a Batman Arkham game on Vision Pro, I think people would be talking about it. I think that's, there's just not enough to do on it. And I think that a lot of people think that's the case with all VRs. Like, well, what am I going to do on it? At this point, there's so much awesome stuff on a Quest 3. Like a Quest 3 is, it feels like a no-brainer. I know it's not an inexpensive purchase, but it's heck of a lot less than a Steam Deck. And nobody seems to have any qualms about recommending that.
I don't know if it's, I think it's like the same as a Steam Deck.
You're right. It's about the same. I shouldn't have said a heck of a lot less. You're right. But
to be fair, I do strap my Steam Deck to my face, though, just for neck exercises.
So I'm going to get a lot of heat for that comparison. I apologize. People are going to be like, but I have my whole library already on Steam. I get it. It's a different equation. I just, you know, I'm a fan of VR. All right. Let's move on. I'm excited about this Batman game. Let's talk about the games that we've been playing, though, in the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? What has been on your playlist lately?
Yeah, so I've got three, maybe four, but I'm going to give one to Christian because I see we've got some overlap, probably for similar reasons. But I've been playing Final Fantasy Rebirth. It's my first time playing Final Fantasy VII. And I never played the original. I was, hate to date myself, but was I one? Was I five? I was quite
young. Well, that's
young.
All the time we have, Max.
You cut out, Max. Did you say 55? I missed the first number you said.
It was. It came out, you know, around that age. But I remember how much people would talk about that game. I mean, throughout the 90s and the 2000s, people would say, it is the best game ever made. It's the best game I've ever played. And I felt this sort of like outsider feeling in that, because I never really played it and didn't for years and years and years, right? It really didn't even touch most of the Final Fantasy series because I was a Nintendo and an Xbox boy. And then to be given a chance now, you know, 2020 was the release of the remake, kind of that setting you up for the first little bit of the game. Mm-hmm. And then Rebirth coming out this year. I am blown away by this game. Like I played the remake and I think I cried like at least two or three times. Like I just emotionally from some of the emotional beats in that game and the use of music and the way that they told these characters' stories, but also from like the meta perspective, not the company, but like, you know, looking at it from the top down, the fact that there was so much passion and love for this game that it deserved getting a full remake, like completely polished from the ground up, made me so emotional to be a part of that, to be able to experience what I had heard people say was the greatest game of all time. And of course, they're not the same game. Right. Yeah. Final Fantasy VII was kind of a relic of its time. And in many ways, it was unique because of what it was doing that other games weren't doing then. But to be given almost what feels like a second chance to be part of that conversation, to be part of that space, to be part of that moment, feels really great, really incredible. And Rebirth is wonderful. It's beautifully done. It runs relatively well on my PS5. I really enjoy it. I will say I'm 9 chapters in and I'm starting to feel a little bit open world did out by it, mm-hmm. right? There's the mm-hmm. side quests and the, I love playing Queen's Gambit. It's absolutely awesome. I am a big fan. I cannot wait until they release either a mobile version or, you know, some other version of the game. I would love to be able to play that a little bit more. Give me Queen's Gambit as like a Hearthstone variant. I would be over the moon, like super happy. But I'm feeling a little bit of the burn of, okay, I am now, what, 60, 70, 80 hours into this game. I would love to be able to move on to the next thing. And at the same time, I've done everything, right? I've completed all the zones. I've completed all the side quests. I've done all the Queen's Gambit battles up till now. And so it's almost like a waste to blow it off, you know, so deep in the game. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm still enjoying it and I'm still loving it. It's one of those games I find myself gravitating to games that constantly have something new to learn, constantly are giving you new mechanics, something new to try, you know, whether that's a new weapon or a new ability or whatever it is. And this is one of those perfect games that, you know, 80 hours in, you're given a new tool to use that you can experiment with and try new things out. And I just, that keeps my brain firing, you know, it keeps me interested, keeps me in that experience. Otherwise, I blip off of games too quickly if they aren't giving me more, you know, soon enough and throughout that experience. I won't get into The Witcher 3 and the trouble that I had playing that game because that was tough. I know it's probably my hottest take. First 10 hours of the game, it was just the same. No new abilities, no new spells, no new anything, right? It was a new story. And that was great. And if you're the type of person who really kind of gloms on to the story and those characters, or you have that kind of intrinsic drive to follow those things, then I think you end up loving The Witcher 3. I wanted mechanically a little bit more from the game, and I just didn't get it soon enough. And maybe it's at 11 hours, it's there, right? Maybe it's 15 hours, maybe it's 20 hours. But at a certain point, I had to kind of cut it off and go, you know what? It's not giving me enough. And Rebirth is giving me that constantly. And I hope it's not a byproduct of this generation that we have to just constantly be, you know, thrown like new information constantly, you know, the entire time through. But I'm definitely a person that loves learning. And if a game can keep teaching me throughout the entire experience, I'm a big fan. I don't know if you guys have played Rebirth or the remake originally.
Yes. Christian, very deep into Rebirth, right, buddy?
I am still working my way through it. It is, Max, I'm with you, and I probably said this before on the show, where oftentimes in open world games, I abandon the open worldiness because I just want to move the plot forward. My two favorite parts about Rebirth are the combat and the characters. And what air quote sucks for me is that I love the character so much that I end up doing these stupid side quests where I don't care. I don't want to, you know, go whatever it is, catch four. I have rats on the brain still. It's Rat Catcher. It's got to be Rat Catcher as a villain for that Batman game. Anyway,
it does seem to be pointing that way.
It does seem to be pointed that way. But, you know, go do this thing. And I'm like, I'm definitely not going to do that. I see it in my HUD. I see I've activated it in this region. I'm not going to do it. And then Aerith is like, do you want to come catch these rats? And I'm like, yes, I do. I want to hear what you have
anything
to say.
For you, Aerith.
I can't turn you down.
Yeah, yeah. I'm coming. I see your not happy face when I look at you and my character. So that game keeps pulling me into its side quests. So it's going slower than I otherwise probably would have progressed through the story, but it's just a fantastic time. This might feel weird to some folks, but I think last week I compared it a little bit to Horizon, or a couple weeks ago to Horizon, where you're hanging out with your crew. It also very much feels like I'm listening to a podcast. Like, I kind of wish I could play Final Fantasy VII Rebirth while doing something else. You know, I'm like, oh, I got my buddies with me, and I'm also writing this script or whatever.
I will not lie. There are moments where, you know, characters are talking to each other in these side quests, and I just pull out my phone and I'm browsing Reddit. I'm going, you know, I hate to do it, but this is a pretty low stakes little side quest.
They're just hanging out.
Yep, I've caught the chickens, and now I have to wait for the person to explain that I've caught the chickens, and I don't have to listen to everything that they have to say at this very moment. Reddit has a little bit more. That's pulling me in. Sorry.
See, that is a huge turnoff for me. Yeah. I can appreciate what you guys are saying.
It's a chill. It's a vibe.
I get it.
It's because I want to do it. You know what I mean?
Right. But why? Like, why? The problem is, if you want to finish it just for the sake of finishing it, like if you want to complete it just for the sake of completing it, like, it doesn't feel like that's quality content. Right? Like, is that side mission? Well, does that really matter?
Oftentimes, I think oftentimes the content of some of the side missions, and I've not finished it, but I think they do become arduous isn't quite the right term, but like taxing. Annoying. And then there's so many of the same one. You start seeing the same ones over and over again, but the dialogue isn't always the same. And sometimes they throw some other cool character moment. And I have played 7 and experienced 7 OG before. That for me, what I'm here for is to spend time with my best friends again. And so that's where I kind of end up choosing to do more of them than I otherwise would in a standard open world game for my play style.
I was curious a little bit whether you were disinterested in the side missions because they just didn't add to your original experience of 7. Like, I don't know how much, I don't really have the context of how much of this game existed in the original game.
Jeff, I mean, you can probably speak to this too. I mean, 7 had some stupid ass side missions.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the game has always been quirky and weird.
Right. Right. Yeah.
It was a video game. What? Yeah. The fact that it had a good story was the surprise.
Yeah.
It's a great game. I'm really enjoying it. Like, Rebirth is fantastic so far. And the remake is, I think, like, it may have weaseled its way into my top 10. Like, it was that good. You know, if I really feel something from a video game, if I feel an emotion that makes me go, man, that was special. Like, that's a great game. And I really, truly think the remake was one of the greats, honestly.
That's amazing. That's wonderful. I love getting that perspective of somebody that is fresh to this this story, this you know, iteration. Very cool.
Yeah, alongside that, doing some Manor Lords. I know you guys talked about it a little bit last week, so I won't go too much into it, but this game is fantastic. It's so good. As a survival, you know, crafter, lover, Manor Lords is one of the greatest, you know, one of the greatest types of these games created. And we're finally seeing some really great colony crafters, colony builders style games coming out with Manor Lords, but also with Farthest Frontier. Both games that I highly recommend to people because they're just doing something, I think, with the technology that we have access to now in PCs that has never been done before. To be able to have, like, unit by unit characters in the game moving around and doing things and doing their jobs. It's not just an abstraction of, you know, hey, I've assigned a woodsman and in 4 minutes he's going to bring me a piece of lumber. There is an actual character who is the woodsman, and they have to go out in the woods and chop down that actual tree. And it's only possible because computers have gotten to the point where they can actually keep all of these variables and all of these values at the exact same time and manage them. And it's so cool to see that evolution of this genre that started out pretty dinky, right? When we look back at colony, you know, builders and that kind of that style, that genre, really come into its own with this new technology available to it. It's so freaking cool. I'm loving it.
That's awesome. So it's the level of sophistication and the does that create a more emotional connection because you're actually able to intermingle with all the people that are.
Yeah.
Yeah. You feel like it is a living, breathing village, city, what have you.
Exactly. And that the people, you know, they all have a name. Right. And they have a family that they belong to. Right. And if one dies in battle, like, you know, that's part of a family that's been lost. Like, you know,
I got to call the Andersons tonight.
And yeah, exactly.
Give them the bad news.
Give them the bad news. He was, you know, speared through the heart by a raider. Sorry. But, you know, and not at the level of like, you know, emotional connection that deep because these elements are pretty abstracted from the game. Right. You don't see, you know, Robert Anderson has been murdered in battle. but you do see your numbers start to trickle down. And then actually, if you go, you know, to their home and knock on the door, like there's only two people there. And it's like, oh, God, like this is getting real. But it's so cool. And Manor Lords is, of course, it's in early access and it is just at the beginning of the development of this game, even though it's taken 7 years to get to this point. Yeah. You know, what that means for the next 2-3 years. Potentially, maybe longer until 1.0, depending on how that transition goes from kind of a solo style developer to more of a team-based development style. I'm so excited for what they might bring to this game because I think it's going to be the pinnacle of the genre. And I felt that way about Farthest Frontier and still kind of do. I think Farthest Frontier and Manor Lords are kind of neck and neck in terms of just really amazing games in that genre. Really cool stuff.
There you have it, Manor Lords. It's getting a lot of great buzz. I still haven't given it a shot, but I'm gonna play it this week. I think that's when I'm gonna download. It's on Game Pass. I got no reason not to.
It's on Game Pass.
Right. Yeah.
And what else is on your
the last thing last week or yeah I guess it was last week last week I was in Japan and you got a chance to go to what I still think is kind of the mecca of video games and nerd culture, right? Inside of Tokyo. We went to a neighborhood in Tokyo called Akihabara. It's the electric town where if you've ever seen photos from Tokyo and video game culture with all of the neon signs and the, you know, the lit up arcades and you walk down that street and it's just noise blasted at you from all different angles, from the arcades and from the gacha machine, you know,
real life cyberpunk, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Though packed with the ditzy tourist who doesn't, you know, is kind of staring around upwards at all the things around them instead of bad guys to kill. And I got a chance to play this really freaking cool game called Sengokushi Taisen. I played it my last trip to Japan and kind of got hooked, but we don't have the machines here in America really access to them. What Japan, those of you that don't know, Japan has a really big arcade culture, right? The ideas behind this was that the typical Japanese person living in a smaller unit wouldn't have access to, you know, a PC room to play PC games. And so they go out, you know, after work or after school and head down to the arcade. And arcades in the last 5 or 10 years have come out with this, I don't even know how to describe it. It is elements or mechanics that transcend just the video game element of it. So this game prints out cards. And the cards have what I think is an infrared code to them. And then you put the cards on the arcade table and you move them around. And your units in the game move based on the positioning of the cards. It is so cool. It is like you're living in, you know, 30 years in the future, right? Being able to control the characters with your hands physically, not with a controller, but moving 3, 4, 5 different units around the board. It's really fantastic. Really, really fun stuff. And pretty accessible to foreigners if you've got a phone in your pocket. Because now, of course, we can just translate everything, right, with Google Translate and hold it up to the screen and translate from Japanese to English. And so I'm sitting there with, of course, like native Japanese speakers around me staring at me as I'm translating word for word, like what, you know, what's showing up on the screen so I can understand it. But it's really fantastic and just something that I've never seen done in the West, you know, here in America or elsewhere in terms of access to a game. The closest I can think of is Amiibo, perhaps with Nintendo Switch, right? And being able to like tap a card on your Switch and a character appears, you know, in your game. Similar to that is probably the closest analog that we have here. But it's that was like Sengoku Shitaisen. It's really cool.
It's like the promise of the old original Microsoft Surface table.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. Where we would be able to play like board games, yeah, or whatnot in the alternate reality,
yeah,
kind of version of it. Exactly right. Yeah. 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 It's really cool.
I went to an arcade just last week with my son, my whole family, but my son was all excited about going. It was one of these barcades. And I was struck at how many of the modern games, I mean, they had a bunch of classic, you know, stand-up arcade games, but they had some modern releases. Like there's a Halo, you know, light gun shooter game. It's called like Elite Strike Team or something like that. So there's new stuff coming out. There's a, you know, there's like a Resident Evil game that's based on the RE4 remake or RE5. It doesn't matter. The point is, there is also a stand-up arcade version of Minecraft Dungeons,
yes,
which is also available on Game Pass. And this, the one that we were playing, spit out little cards.
Yes.
And it didn't work like what you're talking about, but it spit out little cards and you could then, it was like a randomizer for like, you got this item. And it's like, oh, cool, I got a physical card of this item. And then you place that on a reader on the arcade machine and your character gets that item. So you could theoretically like trade cards with your friends and then go and play that arcade game and get that those items, which is pretty neat, I think. But something I could have gotten into when I was a little kid. But it also feels very wasty because it's just constantly spitting out these cards.
Yeah, and the cards are kind of used for one single game, right?
Right.
Like you go to the arcade, and what we've learned since the last time we went to Japan is they've updated the version of Sengoku Shitaisen, and so all of our old cards were worthless.
Oh,
right?
That's funny.
And so you have to collect, you know, make your collection once more, you know, from scratch. But the technology there for the arcade space is getting really cool, and I honestly love that kind of that transcending just the digital space and having something physical feels grounding in a way. It reminds me a little bit of getting a game and opening it up and having the manual for the game right in there and being able to hold that and read that on your way home. That
something was, real. Yeah.
Yeah. Something real to hold and touch. I think these things are important for us, but they're kind of disappearing, except for in very specific little niches. They're out there. Yeah.
I think that's beautifully said. That's Sengoku Shitaisen. And if you're in Japan, seek it out. All right, before we get to Christian's playlist, we'll take another quick break for a sponsor. All right, Christian Spicer, what is on your playlist this week?
I finished the Fallout TV show, which I don't think we've ever, and it doesn't look like today either, I don't think we've ever had it as an official parting gift, but I also think Jeff and I, you and I both would officially recommend it as
it's
parting gift caliber.
It's incredible.
Fantastic.
I kind of don't think we need to, because evidently it's like become Amazon Prime's most watched show ever. So I think people are hip to how good it is, but man, it's very good.
It's very good. It's very, very good. So I, like millions of others and a lot of PlayStation players, I did see that like a lot of people on PlayStation, it's like Microsoft has the top 10 games on PlayStation right now. Everybody's going back to Fallout.
Yeah.
I went back to Fallout and I wanted to spend more time in the wasteland. And I thought, what wasteland am I going to choose? I almost went to New Vegas because I have probably the least amount of time in that. But I was like, you know, I want to go back to 76. Every year, it seems like, or maybe even more than regularly than that, we get some update about this is for you, this is for the fans. We've introduced all this stuff, and they have been plugging away on that game.
Yeah.
I have not gone back to it since launch. I don't know, Jeff, if you've gone back to it, Max, I don't know your history with it, but I played it at launch, and I'm sure the internet always remembers. I'm sure I said some pretty not happy things about the game.
It was not great at launch. It was pretty bad.
We had the same experience, honestly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was not an enjoyable game. And they kept plugging away on it. And I kept being like, yeah, I should maybe, but I have a million other things to do. The show made me put those million other things aside and want to re-dive in to Fallout 76. It has been so long since I played it that when I played it, because it's on Game Pass, and I'm like, well, Microsoft owns it, that's how I'm going to play it now. I don't remember where I played it before because Max, I don't think, was born when Fallout 76 first came out. So I was like, I'm going to, you know, play it on my Series X or whatever. And I load it up and I'm like, and I'm having this debate as it's like downloading. I'm like, do I continue where I was or I just create a new character? I was like, ah, I guess I'll just create a new character and see. And then my friends, I got to learn I had to create a new character because I've played it originally. I bought it on PlayStation 4 forever ago. Like that's where my current Wasteland lived.
Right.
I was like, oh yeah, it's been forever since I played this game. And so I started from scratch, built my whole character. I have played 4 to 5 hours here as of this recording. It's, I don't know how much it changes after this 4 or 5 hours, but this first 4 or 5 hours, gentlemen, it is a completely different game than I played, you know, whenever back in the 1900s, whenever it first came out. I mean, I don't think it was that old, but just a completely different game. One of the criticisms I remember having about Fallout 76 when it first launched is there are no people. And the Fallout world is always so interesting to meet these other NPCs and have these wonderful interactions with them. And when 76 first launched, there was just voice recordings that you could pick up and you'd hear, you know, it was like the world where everybody died. But as they died, they were like, here's my life story. I'm going to throw this in a trash can, you know, and they dump their voice recorder or Pip-Boy in a trash can. And there are no people and there were bots or whatever and mutants and stuff like that.
Christian, October 23rd, 2018.
Forever ago.
Yeah. That number doesn't seem like that long ago, but that seems, yeah.
Six years. 6 years.
It's a long time. Well, in that 6 years, a lot of people have moved into the Wasteland, it seems like. A lot of NPCs. I mean, even the opening minutes of how as you create your character and you come out of your vault, felt totally different to me. And as you go out, I encountered all these human being NPCs that sure enough gave the world this richness that I think was missing originally, where I can see that there's these warring factions going on and this group wants me to do this thing and I'm going to take this to these other people and I'm going to interact with these people this way and here's this ghoul that I'm going to meet that's going to tell me this thing. And I see the brutality of the world, but also with the humor. Like very early in the game, this person kills this other person and the reaction to it is just like, you know, perfect Fallout 3, Fallout 4 style humor of these interactions. And I don't know how long I'm going to stick with it. One of the Let's Chat games I'm working on is the idea of celebrating an ending. I love endings. I have a hard time with forever games because I start to lose my purpose. And so I don't know how long I'm going to keep playing Fallout 76, at what point I will lose that thread. But 5 hours in, I have a main quest, a pretty substantial feeling, meaty main quest thread, and at least 3 really interesting side quests so far. And I've been playing solo. You know, I see the tendrils of the online connected world. But, I mean, don't get me wrong. It looks like butt.
I was going to ask if it feels dated, right? Because MMOs and that live, you know, live service games kind of have that issue for the first couple of hours of feeling like, oh, God, this is from 2018.
It looks like a 2018 game, and when it came out in 2018, it wasn't Last of Us. It wasn't a showstopper visual game, but it seems to be doing everything right, and I'm really curious, you know, for the millions of people that are looking to experience more Fallout, which experience is maybe the one to recommend. And again, only 5 hours in, replaying 76, but for my money right now, I think I'd maybe pick it over 4. Because it's full of so much stuff that doesn't seem as held back by a main campaign, if that makes sense. Like, it is kind of just this sandbox, and I'm fascinated by it. I am fascinated by it. And the last thing I'll say, I'm also fascinated by the millions of people that are maybe looking to experience Fallout, because that show is so polished. It's so beautiful. The VFX look great. And I'm very curious how fans are reacting to playing the games and being like, oh, this is buggy as hell.
Well, the answer to your question of what's the best one to go to, the answer to your question is Fallout 4 with mods. Mm. With a lot.
Not the re-release that they put out.
No.
The old mods.
OG Fallout 4 loaded down with mods. That's the way you're going to get
You're not encumbered at that point?
Yeah, he might be. Actually, there's a mod to get rid of encumbrance if you really want to. But you know what's also amazing in the same vein? Elder Scrolls Online.
Mm.
It's still going strong, and it's incredible, and there's tons of content in it. And neither of these games get the attention that another like standalone release in those franchises would get. But they're both like chock full of tons of great content. Thriving, great systems. Yeah, I mean, I haven't played Fallout 76. I'm just piggybacking what you're saying. But I have played ESO recently. That game still is excellent and delivers a great Elder Scrolls experience.
For all I know, someone has pulled their car over and is currently emailing us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com being like, they added human NPCs 10 years ago. I don't know how recent it is.
Where have you been?
You might be right. I've been in a vault. I apologize. But Jeff, you should, I specifically want you to also play it because we both did not like 76 and I am blown away by how these opening hours are meaningful in a way they just weren't.
I was the guy that reinstalled Fallout 4 VR after the show. That was the thing that made that's what I reinstalled and loaded that bad boy down with mods, which is
Great. Max was the guy who set off a nuclear blast and stared at it so that he could experience.
I remember that moment actually from was that Fallout 3, right? Like you had the choice between Megaton and the other one.
Yeah.
Cool moment, by the way.
Right. I'm not gonna do the whole age thing again, but I was at an age where staring at nuclear explosions was like the coolest thing in the world. Like I remember I would do an autosave and then just load it over and over and over. And I think if my parents knew what I was playing, they would kind of start to worry. But
Helldivers 2 says it's still incredible. The coolest thing to look at.
It is, right? Yeah, exactly. I loaded up, actually, because of you, Christian, I loaded up Fallout 4 for the first time and got into the series on Amazon. And I decided to do the Fallout 4 survival mode, which they had added many years back, but basically one step beyond hard, you have to eat, you have to drink, and quite frustratingly, and the element that I dislike the most from it is that you can't save the game. You can only save when you sleep. And you have to find not only do you have to find beds and bedrolls to sleep at, but you have to find beds and bedrolls that aren't owned by other players who are going to come into the bedroom and go, well, what the heck? Like, why are you sleeping in my bed? Which sometimes you have to do because frustratingly,
I got to sleep in your bed.
Right. Because the guy two blocks down is going to Molotov me out of nowhere, just a 360 Molotov out of nowhere. And I'd rather that not delete 4 hours of bedless progress.
I know you're going to be mad. I slept in your bed. Just hear me out. Hear me out.
I live in this universe where I must save. Yeah. Which, you know, that given the mental states of a lot of people in the Fallout universe, wouldn't be that too far off. And I have to say, you know, your points on this the series on Amazon are spot on. I mean, last week you talked about how it has this just giddy humor to it, this beautiful humor to the series that is so true to the games and the universes that they built. Games that really don't take themselves too seriously. Anything can happen, right? You've got a creature with freaking fingers in its mouth, and it's just that's what it is. That's what this creature is, and that's so cool. And they've done such an amazing job with the series that it is just everyone has to go watch it.
I agree. It is a triumph in translating a video game world to a different medium. Because, and I think that's the secret sauce that has driven people to reinstall Fallout games in huge numbers. I you know, as much as I think is universally loved the Last of Us adaptation. It is an extraordinary adaptation. I don't think it had the effect of people really wanting to reinstall those games in the same way. And it's because the Fallout series succeeds in making the place desirable to be like. It looks like a place I want to experience. It's not going to be necessarily positive all the time, you know. Bad stuff happens in it, but it looks like a place that, oh my gosh, isn't it crazy that I get the opportunity to like go to the, I've been watching this TV show and I can actually wander around in this place. That is an incredible draw, and I don't think any video game adaptation before it has had that effect in that same
way. And without knowing what the end of it is, right? The Last of Us followed so closely to the game that, you know, you're going, okay, I get it. These are the story beats that I've experienced maybe once, maybe twice, depending on how many times you play the game. Yeah. And with some variation and some difference in there. But to have Fallout deviate from what we've known. And of course, yeah, it can, because that's what the games are, right? They take place in the same shared universe, but with different stories every single time, just kind of like Batman. And
don't you do that.
But to be able to sit and experience that without going, oh, I know what's going to happen next, means that you can sit there and really just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like really bake in it. It's fantastic. Oh.
Yeah, it's funny how many stories have come out of people just asking Todd Howard why they prioritize making another Fallout game sooner. It's like, hey, this show's a massive hit. Don't you guys wish you had a Fallout game? And they're like, yes, we do. We are slow at making games.
And the whole argument about what is canon and what's not canon. I can feel too. Every quote from Todd getting more and more frustrated. Like, it doesn't matter. Just enjoy it. It doesn't matter what's canon, what's not canon. Just enjoy the universe and the show we've made. Please.
You guys said you wanted another Elder Scrolls game. That's what we've been working on. Now this, what are we supposed to do?
It highlights, as we're kind of dancing around in some tangents, I will continue to dance. It highlights two other things that blow my mind about it. One, how big of a fumble Halo the show is.
Yes.
And I don't know how much of that is the show itself. I think a lot. I think a lot of it is the show. It's a harder show to make, perhaps visually, even though Fallout, Walter Goggins knows, it's a work of art in Fallout. The VFX in that show are incredible.
Or lack of nose?
Yes, lack of nose. Halo has a lot of VFX shots, but just like, I'm going to do some broad spoilers for the Halo show. Like Master Chief's butt, no one was like, that's going to bring it. Master Chief having romantic relations. Like, it didn't seem to be delivering on what is the best thing about that franchise for a long time. And Paramount Plus, so I think the show shoulders some of the blame. I think Paramount also shoulders some of the blame because everybody has Prime, whether you want it or not, because you have some other version of, you have your Amazon Prime subscription. So I think it's a bigger subscriber base than Paramount. But it blows my mind how big of a fumble Halo seemed to be. And I know they've announced a big update for Starfield, but re-exploring Fallout 76 highlights to me more of the shortcomings with Starfield. And what I typically love about Bethesda games is that discovery and stumbling into something. And Starfield took a lot of that away, where it needed to be an intentional click, planet, go, load, set, see, instead of I walked out of the forest, oh my God, that's a bear. You know, and like, where is this going to go? And 76 has that in spades. And I missed that. So that feels like a nice Bethesda blanket again that I've been missing.
I had a little bit of a similar but opposite experience, actually, because I played about 100 hours of the Starfield. I loved it. I really enjoyed the game. I had to almost turn off social media because people were kind of bashing on it. And with good reason, because I can understand, you know, the issues, especially the planetary stuff. I mean, everybody was expecting No Man's Sky, but made by Bethesda. And we got, you know, Starship Menu Simulator with Bethesda put on top of it. But yeah. I remember playing Starfield and feeling like, this is frustrating. There are all these bugs. There's all these quirks. I don't understand why the game isn't just running the way it should run. And when I booted up Fallout 4 again, I realized that was a buggy mess too. It was full of bugs. All sorts of crazy stuff would happen. Game crashing bugs that we kind of, you know, bared our way through. And of course, Fallout 4 was kind of critically accepted by people for various reasons, but I grew an appreciation for Starfield's bugginess and kind of wonkiness again, thanks to replaying Fallout, because the games are charming in that way with what you have to go through to be able to experience them and get to the end.
It's amazing. It's a weird thing for this company to have this resurgence because of the TV show and sort of be ill prepared for it in so many ways. It's very, very funny. But man, what a great show. Anyway, that is what's on Christian's playlist. Quickly, I want to talk about a game on my playlist that I have been playing this week that was a big surprise. I got a code for this game. It is still in early access, but, you know, it's kind of Jeff's roguelite of the week. I love roguelites. I tried this game called Shadow of the Depth, which is a very clunky title. But I honestly had very low expectations for this game. But I booted it. I got a code for it. Thought I'd check it out. This is a action roguelike from the pure top-down perspective. Not isometric. Pure top-down. We're talking D&D map style top-down. We're talking Gauntlet. You know, we're talking looking down and seeing shoulders and head. That's what we're seeing. They don't make very many games from that perspective anymore. And I was sort of taken by that attempt, which is pretty cool. So I was, I'm going to give this game a shot. I got to say, very pleasantly surprised by Shadow of the Depth. This game's really fun. It really does feel like a take on Gauntlet, the old arcade game Gauntlet. But, you know, with modern trappings, roguelite trappings. So, you know, there are a number of different classes. You start with only one available, which is this big burly sword and shield guy. I've unlocked a couple of others, and they play very differently from one another. But you're into this dungeon, and you're wandering around and you're smacking lots of things that attack you. There are times when a wall will manifest around you, locking you into a certain enclosed space, and you have to kill everything before it'll unlock. But you're finding treasure chests that have various resources in them, gold and upgrades, and you'll find weapons in there. And the weapons, it's a really cool thing. There's no inventory system. You have the opportunity of either picking that weapon up and upgrading your weapon right now, or immediately cashing that weapon in for gold. Or you could just leave it there and walk away from it. That's fine too. And you could, you know, return to that spot later, but you're not going to because you're getting deeper and deeper into the dungeon. So I like the forcing you into a decision right now. Like it's mildly better. It's got different stats. It's got some different abilities attached to it. Are you going to use it right now? Are you going to change? No? Sell it. Like, I love that. It's so streamlined. It's so beautiful. I really dig it. You have a number of, you have, you know, basic attacks and some combos. There's some fun, like, time-based combos where if you, like, press, wait, press, and it will do something different than just press, you know? That's fun. And you'll get an ultimate ability that has a long cooldown. You get a side ability, and all of the abilities that you, well, not all, the side ability that you get is attached to your weapon. So when you change out weapons, it'll often have a different side ability. And so part of the decision about whether or not you want to change your weapon is which of these other abilities do you like? You can get pets and cool things that follow you around. Some of the classes have, the classes play very differently from one another. And ultimately the best part of Shadow of the Depth is that I think the combat feels really good. It's very arcadey. This is not a Souls-like. You do have a parry. You do have a block. You do have a dodge. All of those things are, you know, modern trappings of video games that you would expect. But you can also just go in guns blazing and smack things around. And that's what I like. I really enjoy that. It does feel like there's, you know, 40 enemies coming at you. There's a certain
Fast, too.
It's like fast.
The character, yeah.
There's a certain bullet hell nature to it at times when there are things that like telegraph their fast movement. Well, there'll be like an arrow and they'll shoot at you that direction. Or there are other enemies that literally do shoot off, you know, beams that are coming out into a pattern, bullet hell style. And you have this cool dodge and you're dodging your way around things. It's fast. It's kinetic. It feels good when you smack something. There's a weight to it. Smacking something usually prevents it from attacking you, which I love. I hate games where I hit something and that just, it didn't, it was no impediment to their attack against me. And ultimately, you know, it's got these roguelite things that I like where I'm having a meta upgrade path where even when I die, I can upgrade things. I have resources that I've collected that I can upgrade. So my next turn through the dungeon I'll be slightly more powerful. I think those things could be handled in a more satisfying way. You know, you're just kind of just getting plus two to this, plus two to that, whatever. There could be cooler upgrades, but overall it's really solid. It's really fun. I think it looks sharp. I find the, you know, unlocking the new classes is really satisfying because they play really different from one another. I don't think there's a ton of content in the game right now, but it's in early access and I think they're going to add more to it. This was a huge surprise for me I found myself wanting to return to it and keep playing it because it was just fun. It was one of those, like, it's got that Diablo, I can kind of turn my brain off and relax in the chaos of it. But also there is a certain element of, you know, that the feedback loop is really, really good in this game. I'm getting new weapons. Right now I'm deciding to change out my weapon. Right now I'm getting more powerful. Right now I got a new ultimate ability. Right now I got a cool upgrade that I have to think about. Ooh, that's a cool passive ability. Oh, lightning will shoot off of me anytime I get hit. Yes. Want that. You know, like it's a pretty solid game. I'm really digging it. If you're into roguelikes, this isn't one to ignore. I think this is, you know, a game easily overlooked by a lot of people. I like it. Shadow of the Depth. All right. Let's move now because Max is a board gamer. So we're going to get into a little bit of a tabletop time. Right now. All right. I know, ladies and gentlemen, it's few and far between when we have tabletop time lately. But when we have a guest like Max who's in it, I want to pick his brain, particularly because I think it's behind me. Well, there's two games on your list that are behind me right now.
Uh-huh,
one of them is Frosthaven. Yeah. And the other is still in shrink wrap. I think it's over there somewhere. Ark Nova. I want to hear about both of those. Yes. You can start wherever you like.
Sure. I'm going to do it's spoiler-free Frosthaven because I know it's really easy to spoil these games. And so we're not going to talk about classes. We're not going to get into any of that. We're about 30 missions in with my dedicated Frosthaven group. We've played all of Gloomhaven, and then we've played about 30 missions of Frosthaven. I am loving this game. I mean, I talked at the top of the podcast about how I love games that you're constantly learning. And this is like quintessential, you're constantly learning. You're unlocking a new class, and then you get access to a whole bunch of abilities, and you have to learn how they work and what different builds your class has access to. And Frosthaven just does all of that Gloomhaven did so well, and more. And it's the same thing goes for those of you that have played maybe the spin-off kind of standalone games like, what was it, Jaws of the Lion and others. These games are amazing. You do kind of need to have a dedicated group for these. You need to have people that will show up week after week or month after month, however long it takes you to do it. But if you can ideally keep the same group and have people that are willing to show up and are not going to bail on you and are not going to get into weird little snippy fights, because it's very easy in these games with little fiddly pieces and parts and things that you can kind of steal from each other, they have to be very good friends. But if you have this game group, Gloomhaven and Frosthaven are just amazing. They're just so good. Frosthaven has added a little bit of a section in between matches that Gloomhaven did not have. I will say it gets a little tiring to have to do a lot of that management in between games. There are times where our play sessions last 2-3 hours maybe, and that's for a single mission. We tend to play pretty tactically and kind of within the rules of the game, kind of talk about, hey, I'm going to do this and you're going to do this and let's set this up so that we can pull off some really cool things. And at the end of that, I don't want to have to do six other little things to micromanage this other piece that it adds. I'm not going to spoil what it is, but it's very cool. It's quite neat. It's a nice addition to it, and it still holds up. The story is still relatively, you know, Gloomhaven-y. It's not going to blow your mind. It's not going to be like, wow, this is the greatest thing I've ever experienced in my entire life. But you are going to get that sort of like next level of D&D without the Dungeon Master, where you're being guided through these missions and this story that's unfolding and these little subplots that you can go off and follow or not. If your group doesn't care about it, like don't do all that stuff. Don't try to finish the open world game, because this is open world to the max, to the absolute extreme in a board game. I cannot rave enough about Frosthaven, but you really have to make sure your group is solid. Otherwise, it can fall apart. And that's not to say that you can't bring new people into the fold and have them experience it. But what they lose out on, if we were to lose a member of our group, is 30 missions of history with the same characters. And that is a big risk for a lot of people, which I get. Did you say that yours is unshrink? You have played Frosthaven?
I have not.
Oh, not yet.
Frosthaven.
Yeah.
My question to you is, does it make Gloomhaven obsolete? Is it the place to start?
No. I think Gloomhaven still holds up today.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the best board games I've ever played, and Frosthaven is still up there. It's hard to say like which of these two is better, because they're both great games. I really do think that Frosthaven does more of Gloomhaven, and technically in a lot of ways does some things better. We hit a bit of a difficulty issue with Gloomhaven, where we were finding the missions too easy, but both of the games have the ability to make those missions harder. I will say Frosthaven has nailed difficulty. We in our last mission, which we played last night, we played a mission by the skin of our teeth. Like literally we could not play one turn more or we would have lost. And this has been a recurring thing in this game.
That's incredible.
That just over and over with these missions that feel like if we don't use all of our powers, all of our items, like, and sometimes the items feel a little bit overpowered at times, but you get to feel overpowered frequently enough that the games really have this awesome payoff. I don't think that Frosthaven replaces Gloomhaven. I think, in fact, Frosthaven enhances the experience of having played Gloomhaven. There are little like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Remember this character? And you know, that stuff, which sure, if you were to only play Frosthaven, you would be able to experience and you'd go, okay, that was another side mission. That was nice.
Right.
But without that backing of the Gloomhaven experience, you might find that you're not getting the most out of that experience. I think you could perfectly enjoy Frosthaven. What I don't think you could do is play Frosthaven and then go play Gloomhaven. You'll be ripping your hair out. There are so many rules changes and balance changes and elements between the two games that are so different that I don't think one would enjoy the experience of Gloomhaven after playing Frosthaven. I could be wrong, and I'm sure there are people out there that have experienced it, and you can add me in the comments and say, oh, it was fantastic. And I think that's fantastic if you enjoyed it. But I don't know if I would have.
That's awesome to hear your perspective on it. This is my my investment into my relationship with my son at some point.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we're going to be able to go through it together. I think it's going to be an awesome experience.
Absolutely.
Have you played the Gloomhaven digital version by any chance?
I have. I played a little bit. I didn't play like a full scenario or campaign. I really enjoyed it.
I mean, good, right?
It's well rated for a really good reason. It feels great. And what's nice about it is you don't have to worry about all the little fiddly elements of the board game.
Right.
So if your group is one of those groups that doesn't like fiddling with the stuff and wants somebody else to take over it, and you don't want to pay, what is it, $250, $200 for Gloomhaven, of course, you're kind of paying that across four copies of the game and whatnot. The digital version is an awesome replacement to the physical version. I would recommend it to basically anybody who wanted to get into it, especially if your game group that you find is going to show up is dispersed throughout the world, right? It's accessible wherever you are. It's very good.
You can also play it solo. I mean, you can play the board game solo too, but
What I found, I don't know. Have you played the solo version of the
only the Jaws game? Of the Lion? That's the only one I tried solo. Yeah.
I found that my brain could not keep the card combinations of two, let alone four characters. Yeah. And because the way that the game works is you have 11 cards in your hand, and each card has two abilities, a top ability and a bottom ability. Each turn, you have to combine two cards and use the top ability of one and the bottom of ability of the other. And you must do this every turn. But what that means is you have to keep, if your character has a hand of 11 cards, you have to keep 22 different abilities in mind, and how they mix and match and interact with each other and all these things times the number of characters that you're playing with in the digital version. And I couldn't enjoy it myself because I was getting it confused. These are games where your first couple of missions with a character feels like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how I'm supposed to play this. Each character almost feels like its own game. In a really cool way that has this great payoff once you get it, right? Once you get into it, two or three missions, four missions, five missions in. But the digital version playing it solo, I just couldn't bring myself to do it because I was just whiffing over and over and over again.
Yeah. Fair point. Yeah. I love it. I'm envious of your group that you're
I got really lucky.
Yeah.
I got really lucky.
All right. Tell me about Ark Nova because it's another one that's sitting there. I purchased it. Yet to get it to a table, but I've heard very good things about this game.
Ark Nova has become one of our favorite games. It was a big hit when the game came out. I think it was 2023. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what around there.
It was a lot of people's like number one game of the year, won a bunch of awards. Yeah,
exactly. So it plays almost like a single player kind of or multiplayer solitaire in a way, but with a little bit of player interaction. You're responsible for building a zoo on a tableau in front of you. So you're building the enclosures for the zoo, and you're also vying with other players to gain access to animals, which are a limited resource. Every single card in this game, and the deck is like, 200 cards, is unique. So you will never get the same animal in the same zoo or in different zoos throughout the game, which is so freaking cool. It's something I haven't seen in anything other than maybe Wingspan as an example of a game where every card is unique. Though in Wingspan, a lot of the cards have shared abilities that are kind of similar between similar groupings of birds. Ark Nova has unique cards throughout the entire game, and it plays so cool because what you find is in your initial hand of about seven or four cards, rather, you'll find a little bit of an inkling to go into this, to go towards this engine. Maybe my engine is I'm going to be the ape expert and I'm going to have just primates from Africa. Right. And the game allows you to specialize in that way. And of course, the other players have to kind of let you, right? Because you're the cards that you're going for that are going to give you your apes or your African apes are freely on the board for others to take. But it's rare that two players have exactly the same goal in mind. And of course, it's almost a mutually assured destruction if you both do go that way, because you're both fighting for resources while the other players at the table are able to get, you know, freely grab whatever they want. But the game never really feels nasty. And in fact, it has elements of animals and cards that have like player interaction elements like constriction or poison or the ability to, I don't remember what the other ones are, but elements where you can hurt other players. But every card that has a nasty side to it also has a friendly mechanic that you can choose to play instead. And I love this. If you're at a table that wants to play hyper-competitive Ark Nova and you want to just smash your opponents in the ground and you feel good being nasty, you can be nasty. That's fantastic. That's great. Poison away. But instead, if you want to play a more friendly kind of multiplayer solitaire style game, you can do that instead. What we found with Ark Nova is even with new players, a lot of the point spreads are relatively close to one another, unless a player really isn't getting it. And winning, and even just not winning, but just playing the game and losing to another player, always feels great. It always feels like I built this incredible zoo. I got to see the way that my animals interacted and the engine that I was building for this thing. Almost always you feel like you don't need one more turn. And there are some games out there that feel like, oh, we're just going to get you just close to feeling like you get to finish, but we're going to pull the rug out from underneath you right at the end. And sorry, go home, pack it up. this game always feels like you get to accomplish everything that you want to accomplish in it. Hmm. And it's one of the things I love about it, because the end goal or the end mechanic is player determined. It's the moment when these two markers that track your points cross each other. And so you can put that off for as long as you want, or if it feels like you're really in the lead, you can push for this, you know, to have these markers cross and then hopefully, you know, win that way. My partner won this this past game that we played this week by doing exactly that. I was one turn away from a huge score, and she could tell. She was watching my board going, oh, if Max gets that bird, we're in trouble. And she ended the game one turn early, and I was out of it. Like, there was amazing. No way I was catching up. She absolutely destroyed me. It is an amazing game. It's really good. And again, it's just like Frosthaven. I think it's one of those games that it's people love it for a really good reason. It really does what it sets out to do. It's awesome.
So cool. That is Ark Nova and Frosthaven. Wonderful board game discussion. Christian, you've also been playing a board game recently, right?
Yeah, the game I want to talk about, we haven't talked about yet, is The Chameleon. It is a social deduction game like The Resistance or Werewolf or those types of games. But what I really like about The Chameleon is that a lot of these games are fast and fun, but The Chameleon, I feel like, is like that fast, fun social deduction, but just enough of those oh crap moments that I think keeps it intellectually satisfying. It's a total party game, easy to set up, easy to play. And so at the start of the game, players get a card and they say if you are it says if you're the chameleon or not. Only one chameleon, and then there is a larger grid of words, various words, single words, you know, cake, party, whatever, the little things like that. And then you roll two die, and that gives you a grid, a location on a grid for what that round's secret word will be. So you have this word grid, then you roll the die, and it's like A7. And so everyone that's not the chameleon, and also the chameleon pretends, you all look at this word grid and you go, A7, okay. Zoos, got it. Our secret word is zoos. And then you sit down and you have, you know, whatever it is, just a few seconds to think of a one-word answer or thing that is associated with the secret word. And then you just go around the circle and say your word. So if it's zoos, you can say anything you want, and you can say like a phrase, and you, like I could say Ark Nova now based on this conversation or something like that. So it wants, you want it to be close enough to the thing, but not so close, because the chameleon's job is then when it gets to the chameleon, they don't know the word, and they've only heard, depending on where they've sit based on as you go around and hand off deal, they've heard other people's thing. So if someone says, like, if I say Ark Nova, then Max says churros, and then it's the chameleon's turn, they can look at the full word grid, but it's like, oh God, Disney, because those are, you know, whatever else is there. So it creates this, you have, I think it's 16 words on the grid. You have a 1 in 16 chance of guessing, but you also have this informed idea based on the other player's words that they give. What I think is really fun about it, I think the intellectual oh crap moments, is a lot of times it seems like people have a very similar word for their associated word to the secret word. So like Max says Ark Nova, then it comes to me and I'm like, oh, I was going to say Ark Nova. And it's like, sure you were, chameleon. Sure you were. I'm like, no, I was. We just did a podcast where we talked about Ark Nova. And okay, little tigers. And, you know, so you have these fun moments of just being flustered, which I think are, for me, a key in a fun party game situation. And then there's a save moment at the end that I really like as well. So you do your round, everybody says their word, and then you vote, everybody points to vote who the chameleon is, which I like that physicality of it. Like you're supposed to, you know, literally point across the table at whoever it is, and whoever has the most votes then turns their card over to reveal whether or not they are the chameleon. And if they are the chameleon, the save moment is that chameleon then has a chance to guess the secret word. And so you might have been outed because you said something. I was going to say Ark Nova again. Everybody else was clearly doing zoo things. Then you said Ark Nova thinking you slipped right in, but no one else plays designer board games. And they're like, you're clearly the chameleon. They get you. They vote you as a chameleon. You turn your card over. You're revealed. But then you can say it was zoos. The secret word was zoos. And then you win the game as the chameleon. So there's that really nice end save moment. And so it's fun, it's fast, and also because it is this word grid on this card that, I don't know, it's smaller than half a sheet of paper, right? It's a small enough thing. And yeah, you could pass it around, but you look at it, there have been games where I'm playing with very intelligent adults and someone just gets A2 and they like, oh, skyscrapers, cool. And then they would say like, Superman. And it's zoos because they just misread the grid in that moment. So again, it's like just enough stuff to create unforced errors that keeps the comedy going. It's really fun. It's really fast. And it's super easy to set up and play the Chameleon. It's one of my favorite of those deduction games.
Those cards, they are of a genre, right? Like it's not just random words. They share something with one another.
Yeah, and I think there are booster packs, but like oftentimes the line, I forget if the whole card has a genre, but I know like the words on a line do. So you can make educated guesses. There's some grouping. It's not just like word salad, but yeah.
If you like that game, I think I mentioned this game before, but I put the Detective Club on the list this week because
the Detective Club
is the Chameleon, but with pictures.
Yes.
So it's not words. It's these strange enigmatic cards like Dixit cards. They're very weird, sort of surreal, dreamlike images where it's like a frog with wings flying through a can of soda. You know, it's like, what is that? And every, you know, it's the same thing where everybody knows the word. There's, you know, what you have these cards in your hand, you pick two, whoever's turn it is picks two that are linked in some way, any way they want. So if I have a frog flying through a can of soda, flying through a can of soda, and then I also have a crocodile, you know, dancing in on a stage with a top hat, I can say green as my word, you know, because they're both green. I could say, you know, reptile or amphibian or whatever I want. I can pick one word, right? I write that on pieces of paper, one fewer than the number of people playing. So everybody gets the word except one person. And then everybody silently picks from their hand cards. They'll eventually reveal two, but you do them one at a time. Lay down a card in order that you think it best suits from your hand. That word, you eventually have two, and then you get all the way to the end, and everybody then has to defend their selections. So the person whose turn it is like, well, I picked green because a frog is green and a crocodile is green. They were both green. That's why I picked green. And then the next person is like, well, I picked green, and there's a tree on mine. It is very green. But eventually, one of the people has no clue what the word is and still doesn't. Or now they do, but they, you know, at no point when they were putting down their cards did they know the word. So they have to BS their way through an explanation of why they picked those cards. So on the fly, they're going, I picked green. There's no green on this card at all, but there's like a green, you know, a sense, you know, so they're just BSing their way through it. And then you go around and everybody has to try to select who they vote for, who they think is the person who didn't know. But what is, again, in a similar way to what you described with the Chameleon, what is so beautiful about this game, especially because these cards are so weird and
yeah,
there's never the perfect card for the word. So even when you know the word, it sounds like you're BSing because you're like, I had nothing in my hand that was green. They're like, really? I swear to you, I didn't, you know? So the joy is the people telling the absolute truth sound like they're lying. And that's what's so fun about this, because you accuse your friends of lying. You're like, I promise you. It's great. So the Detective Club also, and the reason, one of the reasons I put it on the playlist or on the tabletop time list this week is because I have pulled this out with three different groups now, none of whom are tabletop gamers or gamers at all.
Or detectives
or a club. And this game has crushed, so much so that I had a friend call me and say, hey, I have this other party that you're not invited to. It's like a family thing, but can I borrow this game and play it? Very, very cool. So very much a variation on the theme of the Chameleon. It's called Detective Club.
The last thing I'll say about the Chameleon, incredible box art. I don't know if they've redesigned it. I think it also came out in around Fallout 76 time, 2016, 2017. But it's like
that already.
Kind of one of those magic eyes type thing with like it says the word Chameleon under it.
That's fine.
If you just kind of glance at it, you don't see the name of the game. Probably bad for the game, but
just a green box. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool box art.
All right. Well, we have gone very long, but Max Neal, thank you so much for being here. That's going to do it for our show. Thank you, Max Neal. Awesome having you on the show. Tell folks where they could keep up with you and all the cool stuff that you do online.
Yeah, for sure. I produce a show on YouTube called Voxel. We look at the art, culture, and the future of video games. And we talk about things like, why do we stop playing games with our friends? Or why do we enjoy playing horror games when really we should be scared and frightened for them? That kind of stuff, kind of thinky topics. And you can find us over on YouTube. That's youtube.com/@VoxelShow. That's the little at symbol. Voxel Show, how YouTube has been doing things. On socials, I am at Hey Max Neal. Just kind of thoughts and feelings about video games and the world around us and all that stuff. So hope to hear from you guys.
Awesome. Very, very cool. Christian Spicer, what do you got going on this week?
Season 3 of Feeling This.
It's happening!
It's happening. Hit the button. It is happening. Alex and I are sitting back down. We're going to start recording this new season. We have our spreadsheet of topics. They are all super fascinating. We've pulled stuff from listeners from the past season, things they wanted us to continue to talk about, new topics to touch on. So it is about the feeling of video games. What makes certain things feel so good? What maybe doesn't click? Why Wipeout feels really fast when if you're looking at the stuff on screen, it's actually not moving any faster than what you've seen in other things or something like that. What makes a precision platformer a joy, and why does creating coyote time add to the experience even though it's unrealistic for what your character did? Stuff like that, exploring the feels behind video games. And we're kicking off recording season 3 this week. I am super stoked. I love talking to Alex Solman. He's one of the smartest folks in the biz, I think. And I'm super happy that he shares his time with us. So that's starting this week. I don't know when they're going to come out yet. I want to get them locked and loaded so we can release them as a season again and shoot them off. But that is starting and I'm stoked. And then this show.
And that is for folks, patrons at any level.
Patrons at any level. Yes. Thank you. Patreon.com/DLC pod. You can listen to seasons 1 and 2 right now, and 3 will be coming soon. In this show, we're on YouTube at DLC Pod. We put up video clips, except not this week. Thanks, OBS. And because, like Fallout 76, we keep getting better over the years. I was like, you know what, Jeff? We should start doing YouTube shorts in 2024. This is the year to start those. So we're going to start with some unique content on socials as well. That's not just video segments from the show. We have our first short out now, and you can look for more of those. It's at DLC Pod on
YouTube. We should get onto TikTok. I hear that's a platform that's here to stay.
Yeah, good longevity on that one.
If there's one thing I'm going to start, it's a TikTok account for this show the day it goes away. You know?
That's consistent with our level of marketing. You can follow me on socials. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with 2 N's and 1 T. Do the film cast as well, talking about movies and TV shows. We have Concerns, a comedy science podcast with Anthony Carboni. And I do the Fan Controlled Show, which is a sports show about the Fan Controlled Sports and Entertainment Network. All of those available wherever you get podcasts. Check them out. All right, let's wrap things up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Max, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do. You know, it's the middle of May. Weather is warming up a little bit now. I want people to get out and see the world. Like grab a friend that maybe you've met in a video game and you live nearby, and like go hang out together in the real world. I think it gives you a context and appreciation for the things that we see in video games. If anybody here has played Skyrim, right? You walk around Skyrim and you see these little stacked rocks. And sometimes if you're going on a trip or a hike, you'll see little stacked rocks. I found out there's a name for that. It's called a cairn. And it actually has a purpose, which is to guide you along the route. And I learned this, and then I went back to play Skyrim and saw them everywhere and realized that if you actually follow those little rocks, you will find secret things inside the game because they're just stacked that way. It's so cool.
It's awesome.
Go out, see the world, get with your friends.
Very cool. Love it. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Well, Jeff, I think Max just said you guys should go get lunch, I think is what I just heard.
We're going to make that happen.
I talked about this on paid DLC, I believe, this last one on Wednesday that patrons can listen to. My comic book bug is back. I went and cataloged all of my old from my childhood comics, and in doing so, I got the itch back. So I went to my local comic book shop, started to pull again, reading books. I want the physical books. I'm handing them to my kids to read after I'm done and kind of getting them into that scene. I love the physical nature of a good comic book and art on page that way. And so for other folks who are maybe dormant or hibernating comic book fiends and are looking for an excuse to get back into it, Deadpool and Wolverine is this summer. X-Men 97 is right now on Disney Plus. There is a perfect re-jumping in point for the X-books happening this summer. The current major storyline is coming to a close, and they are launching three mainline X-books this summer, which first is X-Men, which comes out at the beginning of July. Then Uncanny X-Men launches in August. And then but those are names that have been used before in comics. A new name that hasn't been used in X comics before, Exceptional X-Men, launches in September. And it's Kitty Pryde and, forgetting who else is in that book. But they all have different teams. Like X-Men is Magneto, Cyclops, Juggernaut. Uncanny X-Men, I think, is Nightcrawler, Wolverine. So all really cool teams. And I love the fact that this new jumping on point for a new massive story in the X-books with hopefully a lot of X momentum coming off of X-Men 97 and Deadpool and Wolverine. So it's the perfect time to get back into the hobby and check out some great books this summer.
Tempting. It's tempting. It's like offering me a little bit of heroin. Just try a little heroin.
One hit. Well, they're also going to roll out Wolverine books. They have like other individual. Yeah. Oh, X-Force. There's a new X-Force coming that looks so good.
You're talking about the rest of the heroin.
Oh, gosh. It looks so good. It looks so good. I'm stoked.
I want to tell folks about a great TV recommendation. You probably already know about this because it's been going on a while now. But if there's any chance you're not watching Hacks, season 3 just started. Boy, is that show fantastic. Fantastic. Gene Smart playing a sort of a Joan Rivers type, you know, old school comedian. And she acquires a young writer, and they have this very tumultuous working relationship / friendship. And it's just amazing. And the first two episodes of season 3 hit. It reminds me of how great this show is. The first two episodes are so fun and awesome. This show is hilarious. Gene Smart is divine. Great. Watch Hacks if you're not.
And I think people might have missed it because season 1 at least was a Max original. It came out in that weird time when Max was separate from HBO. Like some people would have HBO, but not Max. It wasn't included across streams every which way. So if you have missed it, it's now under that big Disney umbrella of the one service that you have, Discovery, Warner Discovery umbrella. So Hacks is available.
So good. We also got a listener suggested parting gift. This comes to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Damien, who writes, hey, for the parting gift this week, I was hoping I could drop a plug for a friend of mine. With Baldur's Gate being such a hit, it seems that Dungeons & Dragons is getting a surge in popularity. One of the best parts of D&D, in my opinion, is creating your own character. Character creators in video games can be a time sink. Well, my friend Mariona can help. She is an incredible artist who specializes in bringing D&D parties to life through sketches. She has a quick turnaround time, is very affordable, and best of all, an excellent communicator. You can email her at, I'm going to try to get it right. Ona Roig Illustrations. Ona Roig, O-N-A-R-O-I-G
illustrations@gmail.com. Or you can reach out to her on Discord at Black Moral. Black Moral. I promise you won't be disappointed with her work. Anyway, thanks for a week after week of incredible content, Damien. I love this. Let's get her some work.
Yeah.
I love getting an illustration. That was one of the best things about doing the dungeon run, was getting an illustration of the characters. Oh, so wonderful to have just a visual representation of this thing that sprouted from your own imagination. If you play D&D, let's throw a Black Moral some work. Mariona at onaroigillustrations@gmail.com. All right. Thanks again. If you'd like to have your parting gift run on the show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Max Neal and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. The theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can always get swag for the show by going to store.dlcpod.com. Our biggest thanks are always reserved for our patrons who make this show possible. Thank you, patrons, for being there for us. Our top tier patrons, our hype train patrons, become video games. That's right. It is time to talk about games. Games of your, games of my, games of both of ours, Christian. I'm talking, of course, about Will with one L Harris. The game that'll send you to L, but only once.
Only once.
Do you remember that marketing campaign?
Oh, it was edgy.
There's only one L in hell.
And like the people would do like the loser, like in the yeah. magazine ads, they had like the L on their yeah. forehead, you know, like.
So good.
Oh, man. And just like horns coming out of the side because of the hell imagery and the L. And it's perfect that we're talking about this week, too, because we talked about the cool arcade games that still exist in Japan. And Will with one L Harris was the cool back when the United States still had cool yeah. arcade games.
Yeah.
And to be able to, you know, for me, when I was in the Bay Area when I first played it, and it was like you went into this, you know, pod type thing. And when you went to hell, like it you felt L. like the heat effects
yeah.
and it was in, I mean, the graphics were awful. Let's not kid ourselves. It's an old game, but everything else about the game. Oh, I'm glad there weren't two L's. Cause I don't think I could have handled it.
Well, the sequel, they added a second L, and I think that's really why the franchise isn't remembered today.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it lost its entire identity at that point.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, what was that even called? Wool? How do you even say that? Wool? Yeah.
It was like you're going to hell. And it was just pronounced. It was just spelled correctly. And you're just like, what? There's nothing special about that.
In my house, we say H-E single hockey stick.
That's right. That's because of that game.
Yeah.
Oh, that game, it was so violent as well. You know, like I barely had the will to get through it. You know what I'm saying? Because it would harass me.
Who has more than one hockey stick? You don't play hockey with two hockey sticks.
That's right.
You go to H-E single hockey stick. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. There was a wild level where you play hockey against Lucifer.
Which also, like, I always lost because the rink would just melt and my character drowned.
Yeah. That was a very funny part. you're just like, press X to swim through hockey rink.
Hockey and H-E single hockey stick? I don't think so. Fire, brimstone. Yeah, it was intense.
Great game, though. Great game.
Great game.
Another great game I recall from days of yore was Jeff Luxack. Do you remember that game?
As a big Saved by the Bell fan, I loved Jeff Luxack because yeah. – my friends and I would always gather around and we'd talk about how lucky Zach Morris
yeah, he's
was.
Luck Zach.
Luck Zach. And the way it brought that idea of just getting away with things by the skin of your yeah. teeth into a video game, it's Jeff been done better.
I, th-
I think that video games that rely on RNG now get a bad rap, you know? But yeah. Back then, all I wanted was the Jeff Luxack game, because it was a single button. You just pushed a single button, and then you would either win or lose.
And then when you started, too, it would be like, are you feeling Jeffy?
What? It was literally, you push a button, and then a big hand just reached into the Luxack and pulled out a win or a lose. You know? I was riveted to that game, because I was like, okay, I've lost 6 times in a row. I'm going to put another quarter in.
You're due.
Maybe I'm due. Maybe
you're due.
People called it gambling, you know, back then. But you didn't win anything other than
just bragging rights.
Just bragging rights. My name, my 3 letters I got to put on the leaderboard for winners. You know, it's a number of times won. One.
Which, oddly enough, you were only able to put in J-E-F. You were Jeff with one F.
Jeff with one F, Luxack.
On Jeff Luxack. It was phenomenal, because I feel like now mobile games have kind of really given that gotcha mentality a bad rap.
Right,
but it, there was nothing hidden about
No, it was Luxack. Literally the first loot box.
And the biggest loot box at my local arcade was the quarter holder of Jeff Luxack, because we were pumping quarters into it.
Oh, man. And I had a friend who was like, if you push the button lightly, you're more likely to win. And I would just smack it.
Did you ever – it is a game that really only worked in arcades. Did you ever play the Genesis or Super Nintendo version?
It wasn't as good.
It was as good.
If I don't have to put a quarter in, what am I even wagering? Yes. You know,
you could just, my friends and I would just play all day, and you could just sit there and press A over and over and over and over again. But it was like, if my parents weren't going to be disappointed in me for spending $20 in 4 minutes, like, where's the fun?
And the graphics weren't as good on the Genesis version either. Cause like in the arcades, you really could see all of the folds of the sack.
Yes, and the voice, too, would be like, you're born from your grave. And I'm like, what are you even saying?
Sega! Anyway, we enjoyed both of those games, and we enjoyed being able to share them with you. The only reason we were able to is because we have awesome Hype Train patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. If you'd like to become one, visit that website. Get your name immortalized as a video game. Thanks for supporting the show. All right. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.